But first, we got to talk about spooky and haunted hidden Chicago landmarks. John Schmidt, of course, has been our resident historian on this program for the last couple months because his new book, Hidden Chicago Landmarks, has out. And we've been going all over the city and the area to bring you the stories of these hidden Chicago landmarks. In Johnson's studio tonight to do sort of an October roundup. John R. Schmidt is the author of Hidden Chicago Landmarks. And we're going to talk about a cemetery, a one-man cemetery in a scrapyard. We're going to talk about the Robinson family graves off of East River Road and the Couch Mausoleum in Lincoln Park. John Schmidt, good to see you, buddy. How are you?
Hey, glad to be here, Justin. This is a great studio, great view. I don't know how you keep your mind on your business here.
Well, it's funny because we almost always meet you at these places, and we've changed it up now to have these conversations. I would love to have it like monthly to talk about the spots in your book. That's how much we love it. Let's get into it. It's October. It's Halloween time, and I think no better than the because there's all these, you know, these legends and myths when it comes to Chicago and Halloween and haunted this and haunted that. But the let's talk about the one-man cemetery.
Yeah, this is the smallest cemetery in the city of Chicago. It's about 100 square feet, which is the size of somebody's bedroom, probably.
Right, right.
And it's got one resident, a man by the name of Andreas von Zerngebel. And it's located in a scrapyard off Ewing Avenue, about where 93rd Street would come in.
So 93rd and Ewing-ish, a one-man, it's in a scrapyard.
It's in a scrapyard.
So what is it? I mean, is it a scrapyard and you just know he's buried somewhere in there?
Yeah, basically that's what it is. I mean, you got to go back in the history of this thing. You go back, go back to Andreas' story. He's born 1797 now. You're not sure where he's born. Some places, some sources say he's born in Russia. Some say he's born in Bavaria, wherever. Anyway, 1815, he is in the Battle of Waterloo, and he helps beat Napoleon, but he comes out of the battle with only one arm. And after that, he becomes a fisherman on the Danube, which is, you got to figure that's pretty tough for a guy with one arm.
Yeah.
But anyway, he's at it.
Tough work regardless.
But yeah. He gets married, he raises a family, and he's fishing and fishing and fishing. And then in 1848, there are a lot of revolutions break out in Germany. And it's time to vacate the family, he thinks. So where are you going to go? You're going to go to America. So they come over to America, Andreas and his family and his bunch of kids. And at first they go to Milwaukee, and he fishes off Milwaukee, and they think, well, we'll try someplace else. So he goes down the lake past Chicago to around the mouth of the Calumet River. And he buys his plot of land and gold at the mouth of the Calumet River, and he goes on fishing. But he's only doing it for a couple of years because 1855, he catches a fever, and he dies.
Oof.
Well, according to the family, the old fisherman's last wish was he wanted to be buried on this plot of land by his old fishing ground. So they buried him over there by the mouth of the Calumet River.
Right.
And then the family eventually dispersed. But they come back and they take care of the grave. And time went by. And then in the 1880s, this canal company decides they want to get all of the land. They're going to develop the land for their business. And the von Zerngebel family says, hey, this is our land. You know, Andreas bought this. He paid in gold and everything like that. Well, there's trouble with this because the Chicago fire in 1871 had destroyed a lot of the real estate records.
Yes, I've heard this before. That was a big issue at the time because all of the deeds and all the property records, they were destroyed at City Hall downtown or wherever they were kept. And a lot of people were confused about who owned what.
Yeah, and the family said, well, this is our land. You know, Andreas is buried here. You know, you can't take it. Naturally, it's our land. We wouldn't just stick him anywhere else. So the canal company fights him, and they go to court, and it goes back and forth, back and forth. And then in the 1890s, the Illinois Supreme Court makes a decision on this because other information had come in. First of all, it seems that some other people may have been buried on the land, and other witnesses said, well, Andreas never owned this land. He used to hang out in Whiting, other places like that. And other people were in the canal company say, hey, this family never said anything about this, and the land became valuable. So the Supreme Court makes their decision, and they said the canal company gets the land.
Oh,
But it is so nice that the von Zerngebel family has taken care of Andreas all these years. So he can stay there. They can tend to his grave. And whenever they want, they can come and visit his grave.
So that's in the Supreme Court ruling? They said the land's going to go to the canal company?
It goes to the canal company, but Andreas
Gets to stay.
Gets to stay. So time goes by, and every once in a while, when a newspaper needs a filler or something, they dig up this story. Mike Royko wrote about it, and probably, you know, 20 other people over the years, about this cemetery, this one man's cemetery in his scrapyard. Well, it had been a his grave had been surrounded by this white picket fence. And a little cross on it.
So they would, you have a picture in the book, but there would just be scrap. I mean, this is, you know, just metal piles and piles of scrap. And then this little white picket fence, little blocked off 100 square foot that was where he was born.
Yeah, well, originally, but the picture in the book is later because that fence kept getting knocked down, you see. But, you know, people going around the scrapyard, they try to be respectful, but they, you know, they got, they're working, right?
Yeah, there's a ton of scrap, right.
So one of the historical societies got together with the family, and they got some money together, and this is the picture I got in the book. They got these, I think it's 7 cement blocks, and they put it around there. And they got a gravestone from Andreas, and it tells about him. I mean, they got the wrong year for the Battle of Waterloo, but other than that, you know, it's a nice setup. So he's still there, and the thing is, I drove by there a couple weeks ago, and the scrapyard looks like it's closed down, so I don't know what's going on.
What's
going
to happen next?
I don't know what's going to happen. All you know is Andreas is probably going to stay there.
He better.
I don't. Maybe they're going to open a museum or something like that.
No, my guess is they're going to put a Burger King up on that spot, and then there'll be like, and there'll be another lawsuit about trying to move him. You know, what an amazing story. And when you think about it, at the end of the day, you know, do people know that story? They don't know. I mean, is it open? Can I walk over there and be able to pay my respects to him?
Well, as I said, when about 2 years ago, when I was researching the store and I went there to take a picture, the scrapyard was still operating. So I went to the office and I was very polite. And they said, oh, sure, you know, just watch out. You don't get knocked over by something. And I took a few pictures. There's one in the book. But as I said, who knows what's going to happen next? Mm.
Well, the smallest cemetery in Chicago, down at the scrapyard at 93rd and Ewingish. John Schmidt is our guest tonight. He's the author of Hidden Chicago Landmarks. We're talking about haunted hidden Chicago landmarks tonight on the program. We'll take our break here and we'll come back, and we got to talk about the Robinson family graves and then also the Couch Mausoleum in Lincoln Park, which a lot of people think is just good architecture, don't actually recognize that it's a mausoleum in the middle of a park. We'll talk about those two stories. John Schmidt here on Extension 720. Stay with us. Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman with you. John Schmidt is in studio. Hidden Chicago Landmarks is the book. Haunted Hidden Chicago Landmarks tonight, as we pick out some of the more Halloween-y type stories. I mean, they're not really scary. They're just about, a lot of them about graves and things like that.
But dead people.
Dead people. John Schmidt in studio. Robinson Family Graves off of East River Road. What do we got here?
Okay, this is East River Road, and you go south on East River Road, and you got a forest preserve on your right. And just before you get to Lawrence Avenue, you got a little turnout over there, and you pull out on the turnout. And that's the path that leads you to the Robinson family graves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm just adding.
And it's a forest preserve. It's a great picture I got in the book of a couple of deer walking around there looking at you. What's this guy doing walking around?
So anyway, this would be for not people who don't necessarily live in the area, this would be northwest suburbs.
Like, far northwest on the way to O'Hare. Yeah. On the way to O'Hare, actually. And you know, like much of Chicago history, there are legends around. And Alexander Robinson, the guy that we're talking about here, he's another one of these legendary people. We don't know much about him. He was born in 1787. He was Scottish on one side, and the other side he was Native American. And there's kind of an argument over which tribe he belonged to. But anyway, during his teens, he became friends with John Kinsey, who was one of the early American settlers. And in 1812, he followed Kinsey to Chicago, and they were working in the trade with the native tribes. And 1812, when they had the Battle of Fort Dearborn, Alexander Robinson, who was half native tribe, helped rescue some of the people from the Potawatomi. Yeah,
this is real Chicago legend here.
Right. Well, Robinson comes back to Chicago, and he works in the native trade, and he opens a tavern, which It was kind of a difficult for him because he couldn't read or write, but he came up with his own system of little marks on the paper, and he could keep track of the.
Now this is not is not Robinson Family Ribs. This is a different.
This is Alexander. Well, maybe, who knows?
Who knows, right?
Anyway, this is Alexander, and anyway, the sources are kind of confused on like early history because one source says he's married to one lady, another source says he married another lady, and maybe he's married to both or neither. But anyway, it gets confusing. And his tribal name was Chichipinque, which means blinking eye. And he had sort of a facial tic, we think, is what it was. But anyway, he's established himself in Chicago. Well, in 1829, the Americans in Chicago want to clear out the native tribes that are there. So with kind of some strange maneuvering, somehow or another, Alexander Robinson winds up as the chief of the local tribe here, over here, even though that wasn't his tribal affiliation. So he helps negotiate the removal of these native tribes. And, of course, the American white people over here, they're very happy with this. So he gets a pension, he gets a lump sum cash payment, and they give him some land on the Des Plaines River. And so he decides to settle on the Des Plaines River, and that's where he sets up with his two wives or zero wives or whatever. And he's living over there, and the early city directories list him as a farmer, and every once in a while somebody will come out to visit him, and he tells these old stories about how he did this, that, and the other thing, how he saved Captain Held and everybody at Fort Dearborn. Well, anyway, Alexander finally dies in 1855, I believe was the year. And anyway, his family still continues to live there for many years. And after a while, they start selling off the land, we think. It's kind of confusing, once again. They were supposed to keep the land in perpetuity in the family, but somebody started selling it off, maybe. So anyway, it gets involved in a whole big lawsuit again, as just
all history does.
Always a lawsuit.
Always a lawsuit.
Always a lawsuit. And finally, anyway, what happens is the Forest Preserve District gets the right to build a forest preserve here. But again, they let the last Robinsons live there.
Well, we at least respect our history. So if you go to Forest Preserve out there off of East River Road, you can find the...
It's Robinson Woods. And,
Robinson Woods,
yeah.
Now you know why that's Robinson Woods.
Yeah.
That's awesome. All right, the last one, we got about, I would say about 5 minutes here. All right, so let's get into this one. This is interesting, the Couch Mausoleum in Lincoln Park. And the reason it grabbed my attention, this story, is that a lot of people don't remember or know even that at one point Lincoln Park was a cemetery.
It was the
Chicago City Cemetery.
Yeah, because when Chicago started, you know, it's down by right where we are, actually, off Michigan Avenue and the Chicago River, and that's pretty far removed. That's a good 2-3 miles up there. And that was the city cemetery, and a lot of famous people were buried over there, and the Catholics had a cemetery just south of there as well. So around... Well, there's this guy, Ira Couch, let's get to him. He's born in upstate New York, comes to Chicago, and he and his brother go into hotel business. They open a hotel called Tremont House, and the thing burns down. And this isn't even a Chicago fire, it's just burning down. So they build another hotel, and that one burns down. And I think it was the third hotel they built finally. They got smart. They built that one out of stone so it wouldn't blow down.
That's good.
And so it becomes a very popular place. All the beautiful people who come to Chicago in the 1840s, they want to stay in the Tremont House. So Ira Couch gets rich, and he can retire. But then he gets sick, so he decides to go off to Cuba to try and recuperate and acclimate. But he dies in 1857. So they decide to bring him back to Chicago, and they're going to build a nice mausoleum for him, beautiful mausoleum. And they get John Van Alsdale, who was the first professional architect in Chicago, and he builds this mausoleum, and it costs the equivalent of $200,000 today. And they put him in Lincoln Park. Well, time goes by, and 1869, you know, the city is starting to encroach in Lincoln Park, and the Lincoln Park commissioners want to use that land for a park. So they start removing the graves. But the Couch family kind of balks at this.
Yeah, they paid a lot of money for that mausoleum.
Right, right.
Moving that thing.
Right. And, you know, you hear stories about this, that it went to the United States Supreme Court, and they decided, another court decision, right? And that the U.S. Supreme Court decided he could stay there. Well, kid with Chicago Researcher did some research on this a few years ago and couldn't find this decision. So we don't know why the tomb is still there.
It's on the south end of Lincoln Park. And if you're walking through just the park and you see this mausoleum, you might say, oh, cool architecture. You don't even know that it's actually a mausoleum. There's actually a body in there.
Yeah, it's who knows how many bodies? We don't even know how many bodies are in there. The thing is behind the Chicago History Museum, okay? And as I said, nobody knows why they want to tear it down. It was probably the family and the Lincoln Park commissioners couldn't agree on who was going to pay for it. But they figured, well, we'll just let the thing sit there. I don't want to pay for it. So the thing sat there. And when I was a young guy, like in the 1960s, you know, I'd go, you know, through Lincoln Park, and they had all this overgrowth around here, and you couldn't even see the blasted thing. I mean, this is in Boston. You go to Boston, and they say, oh, whoa, there's the old Granary Burying Ground. That's a big tourist attraction. Right. But this is Chicago, so they're trying to hide the thing. Well, finally, somebody decides, well, we might as well celebrate this thing. So they cut down all the bushes a few years ago, and now you drive by, they got a big spotlight on it. I think the next thing they're going to do is if they wanted to, they could probably charge admission because that's Chicago way, right?
And you know, it's so great that to think about Lincoln Park and people go around it and they're like, oh, it's just history, and not recognizing that all of the things that happened in Lincoln Park were once a city cemetery.
Well, we have to tell you, sometime we'll tell you about David Kennison, the con man that's buried over there, but that's another story.
That is another story.
It's another story.
John R. Schmidt is the author of Hidden Chicago Landmarks. He was giving us our haunted Hidden Chicago Landmarks tonight. You can find the book at all places. But, John, you know, what I'd like to do is do this once a month, have you in and talk about some of the awesome stories that are in your book.
I love it.
And we continue. Thanks, John, for being here. Appreciate it.
Sure.